This is the Bigger Pockets Podcast, show 183.
December, within 6 months, I had three properties and then an offer already in for a fourth one. So it all just kind of pops out of the woodwork as opportunities arise.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
What's going on, everybody? This is Josh Dorkin, host of the Bigger Pockets Podcast, here with my co-host, Brandon Turner. Come on down.
I was wondering about that.
What's up, man?
Not much. How are you?
Good, good, good. Excited to get to see you in a couple days.
Yeah, we're going to hang out in Chicago. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
We just had a 4th
of July. Hopefully we don't get shot.
Oh, we won't get shot. There. Yeah, I've heard it's a little scary. We just had 4th of July yesterday. I know we're recording this, or this comes out obviously a week and a half later, but this weekend was 4th of July weekend, which was
How was your 4th? You still have all your fingers.
I still have all my fingers. I'll tell you this. So this is my first 4th in my new house. So my new house is on top of this hill that overlooks my town. So last night watching fireworks, I sat in my hot tub and overlooked the entire town of Montesano shooting off fireworks.
Hello, everybody. This is Brandon Turner. I was sitting in my hot tub drinking wine and champagne.
No, I was with my mom and dad. I was
doing fireworks.
I was with my mom and dad. But no, seriously, like my mom and dad are visiting right now.
Hey, Brandon.
Seeing the new little girl. Yeah?
Hey, Brandon.
Yeah?
Could you pass the Grey Poupon?
I'm just saying, I've just bought this new house and it's incredible watching the fireworks. I'm like, people letting off their own fireworks down. It's amazing. So next year, everyone's invited. Awesome. Next week, everyone's invited to my house for
hot
fireworks.
Hot tub time machine.
Yep, hot tub time machine. Yeah. in another quick story. So in typical fashion, so last Saturday night or two nights before 4th of July, it's a Saturday night at 11 o'clock p.m. My office manager who answers phone calls is on vacation. So I'm answering phones and 11:30 at night or 11 o'clock at night, a water heater blows up or not blows up, but, you know, ruptures and leaks water everywhere on a weekend and a holiday. Imagine getting a plumber in Podunk at 11 at night. And
so let me guess, you were fixing it yourself.
I was not. I actually just hired a full-time contractor, you know? So like I called him up and was like, hey, Joe, you remember how I said middle of the night phone calls never happen? And he just burst out laughing. I'm like, yeah, I'm sorry. He took care of it. But anyway, typical, nice. Right?
Good stuff.
Yeah. Anyway.
4th of July.
Happy Independence Day.
Yeah.
All right. Nice. Let's move on.
Oh, shall we?
Shall we?
We shall. Quick tip. All right, guys. Why don't we go to today's
quick tip?
Quick tip.
Today's quick tip is, you know, so we released a book a few months ago called The Book on Managing Rental Properties. And alongside it, we released the book on managing. Did I just say that? Book you on said, rental property investing and the book on managing rental properties.
Managing, yes.
All right, and rental properties. I don't speak A very well-y. All right, so we released these two books. And at the time, we did not release the, what's it called? The audiobook of the book on managing. Well, now it officially is out now. The Audible version of the book on managing rental properties is now on Audible.
Yes.
So check it out. So go to Amazon or Audible and you'll get there.
Or if you want to get both books, find the package that we offer. You can go to biggerpockets.com/rentalbook. And the reason that that took so long is because your lovely, 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 lovely wife, Heather.
She was going to record it, but
she
was going to record it, but she got a little bit busy with a baby and being pregnant. So I
she chickened out.
She chickened out. So I recorded the whole thing.
Yes.
Not as good as my wife. It's a shame. My wife's got a better voice than I do, but whatever.
Yeah.
It's still her content mostly. Like she wrote a good 2/3 of that book.
Yeah. Awesome.
Because she's a smart one.
She is. All right. Yeah. Well, let's talk quickly about today's guest. She's amazing.
Amazing.
Today's show is not a show about how do I go and do a billion deals. Today's show is for those of you folks who are sitting around saying, you know what? You guys talk to a lot of people who do a ton of deals. Why don't you talk to more people who are just kind of doing it on the side to build wealth for their family, financial independence, things like that. And that's what this show is about. You know, she's working a job. She's picked up a bunch of properties. And at the end of the day, you know, she doesn't want to be a full-time real estate investor. That's not her purpose. Her purpose is to use real estate as a tool to build wealth while she continues to go ahead and, build her life.
Yeah. And it's been a year. I mean, she's been doing this 1 year now and she's gotten a bunch of properties, achieved, you know, some really cool milestones. And you guys are going to love it. Super relatable, super fun.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Cool, so,
passive income without the property headache, it's possible. There's a way to invest passively in real estate and get monthly income without any tenants, maintenance, or property management. The Wealthy have been doing this for years, and if you're an accredited or high net worth investor, you too can collect cash flow without the headaches that come from owning rentals. How? By investing in a private real estate fund with PPR Capital Management. PPR's co-founder, Dave Van Horn, wrote the book on real estate note investing for BP. But he's not just investing in notes. Dave and his team also have an extensive background in commercial real estate. And with PPR Capital Management, they're strategically investing in both notes and commercial real estate nationwide. With over $500 million in assets under management, PPR has provided individuals with a steady source of truly passive income since 2007 without ever missing a payment. Check them out at investwithppr.com. Again, if you're looking to get monthly passive income from an experienced team with a strong track record, go to investwithppr.com today. You might think you want real estate, but that's not true. What you really want is passive income. With new investors struggling to find deals or get enough money to buy them and veteran landlords tired of the constant tenant phone calls, is there a better alternative? Actually, there is. Short notes from ConnectInvest. ConnectInvest is an online investing platform that allows you to easily participate in passive real estate investing, and all you need is $500 to start. Short notes collectively funds a diversified portfolio of commercial and residential real estate projects across acquisition, construction, and development phases. You'll earn a fixed monthly income without the hassle of owning or managing real estate. Head to connectinvest.com/BP to create your account. Fund your digital wallet with at least $500. Select from 6, 12, and 24-month short notes with annualized return rates up to 9%. Then sit back and let your monthly returns roll in. Join today by visiting connectinvest.com/VP. connectinvest.com/VP. The easiest way to collect rent? RentApp. RentApp is a seamless, secure, free payment tool for small rental property owners like you and me. Built by a team of fintech veterans behind Square and Cash App, RentApp uses ACH bank transfers to deposit rent directly into your account. Landlords love RentApp for its unbeatable convenience. Isn't it time you made rent collection easier? RentApp, the free and easy way to collect rent. Learn more at rent.app/landlord. That's rent.app/landlord.
All right, guys, this is show 183 of the Bigger Pockets podcast, and you can check out the show notes at biggerpockets.com/show183. And before we get to our guest, Sarah, really quickly, if you are not a subscriber to the show on Stitcher, iTunes, where else is it? Google Play, you name it, SoundCloud, go to these places that you want to consume it. And there's a little subscribe button typically, and hit that subscribe button, Add yourself as a subscriber so that you can get all the shows as they come out.
And it helps us out.
And of course, it does help us out, and leave us a rating or review if you have a chance. All right. So with that, let's bring on Sarah Pritchett. Like we said before, she's doing these great things. She's building this wealth. It's really interesting. Great lady. And I'm very, very excited to have her on the show. And the best part about it, if you wait until the famous four, there's a challenge between Brandon and Sarah, which hopefully we'll all get to see one day. So
Hopefully. Stay
tuned, listen up, and let's bring her in. All right, Sarah, welcome to the show. It's good to have you here.
I'm very excited to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. So you've listened to the Bigger Pockets podcast before, correct? You're like a listener. Is that correct?
Yes. I've been listening since probably, I don't know, a little over a year and a half.
Okay, cool. So one of the reasons I like having people on the show like your story today is you haven't done hundreds and hundreds of deals, but you set out a goal, and we're going to talk about all this. You set out a goal, you wanted financial freedom, you started listening, started learning, and now you're crushing it, and it's awesome. And so I'm excited to talk with you today and kind of learn your story, because all I know is an overview. So pretty excited.
Okay. Yeah, great.
Cool.
Here's a secret to the crowd. Sarah is fascinating.
That's what I hear. Josh has said that before.
Well, you know, as you can, you'll be able to see on our photo of the cover photo for the podcast. You know, she's rocking the fighter pilot helmet. So let's talk about that really quick. Are you fly fighter jets? What is it that you do?
No, that was a very lucky day. I got a ride in an F-16.
Nice.
But I
got a ride in a really crappy taxi cab with, you know, vomit next to me once.
Oh, really? So no cash cab or anything. It was just vomit. No. Yeah.
Although if I went in an F-16, I'd probably puke.
Yeah.
Yes. It's hard not to with the type of, it was just very intense. That's for sure. Yeah, I mean, I'm in the Air Force, and I went through ROTC at University of Michigan from Troy, Michigan, not Detroit. So a lot of people, when they hear Troy, they hear Detroit. And I know Josh's hatred of Detroit, but
I have hatred of nothing.
Okay. Well, you know, a lot of people know that movie 8 Mile. So I grew up on 18 Mile, which is a nice suburb of Detroit. And I guess from there, I went active duty Air Force and moved to the Destin, Florida area for 4 years. And now I'm here in Colorado. So it's been a tough go in the Air Force, really. But okay. It's a lot of fun.
Okay. So how did you decide that you wanted to do something differently or you wanted to start buying real estate? I mean, how did that transition come about?
Sure. I think it was December 2014. I plugged into Mr. Money Mustache. Kind of learning personal finance is interesting to me because in 2009 is when I entered the workforce, and that's when a lot of craziness was going on in our economy.
Real quick, for those who don't know, what does that mean, Mr. Money Mustache? I mean, me and Josh know Mr. Money, but what is that?
Okay, so Mr. Money Mustache is a blog, and he's actually from Longmont, Colorado, not too far down the street from where we are now. But Mr. Money Mustache is financial independence, financial freedom blog. So he does a lot of, I think he worked until he was 30, and then he retired, and now he only works because he wants to work. And I thought that was an amazing feat to achieve at 30. And part of the ways that he did that was, you know, saving up, and he talked about real estate a little bit in his blog as well. So,
but a lot of it is about just cutting costs and
being a little frugality.
Yes,
extreme frugality, I would call it.
I mean, I guess it depends. His is more, it's a lifestyle blog. He talks about how, you know, you don't have to get a first class ticket somewhere. You can enjoy, it's okay to, you know, slum it a little bit, I guess. Enjoy doing your own work and not spending a fortune on things you don't need. So
There you go. Yeah. So you discovered this world of financial independence. How did it manifest for you?
Well, when you say manifest in terms of how did I decide that I wanted to pursue it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. A lot of it is, the book Secrets of the Millionaire Mind, when you're kind of learning your financial blueprints, you know, when I was growing up, our family situation changed, and suddenly, you know, that idea of it's not always going to be a comfortable lifestyle. You're going to, I don't know, face challenges in your life. The economy will go up and down. I just wanted that security. And I really like that lifestyle of not, you know, even though I'm in the military, you know, waking up really early and all that kind of stuff doesn't seem attractive for the next, you know, at least 20 years. And I like to travel. So, you know, we're going to South Korea in a few weeks. And so I just wanted, I guess, to eventually make a lifestyle where if something bad happened, I'd have a fallback plan. And if I want to travel the world, I can do that. So
I love it. Cool. Yeah. So let's talk about real estate then. How did you transition into buying real estate?
I transitioned into buying real estate after kind of learning from, again, Mr. Money Mustache, doing a lot of research on his blog. And then, you know, pretty much any real estate question I had that I put into Google would redirect me to Bigger Pockets.
Yeah.
So it took me maybe 2 weeks to plug in immediately. I mean, just straight from what is real estate? How can I get into real estate to being a member on Bigger Pockets blog? And I started, looking, I guess, about everything, just kind of bringing everything in, looking on the forums, reading everything, hopping on your webinars, Brandon, everything. So
that's awesome. And I didn't know you came to my webinars, which people can sign up for at biggerpockets.com/webinar. We're doing one this Wednesday. Anyway.
Nice.
Yeah, you like that. All right. Anyway, so you started learning, started growing, started kind of networking and all that. So how'd the first purchase come about?
First purchase came about when I did, I felt comfortable. I was starting to analyze properties, realize that, you know, how do I, what makes a good property? And I settled on actually a place I'd been in Florida. And because real estate is a little less competitive there. And here in Denver, it's exploding and it's hard for even people looking for primary residence. I have a friend who's been looking for a month for a house and they just get outbid, I mean, by $20,000 plus, you know, cash offers for a house worth, you know, over $300,000. It's nuts out here. So, I decided to kind of start down in Florida where, again, real estate's a little less competitive. It is a little cheaper. I know the market really well. It's a military area. So I know I'm going to get, you know, renters at least. So I tried to jump in. First deal was an attempt at a short sale, which came back and it didn't end up working out, but we just kind of kept trying to put in some offers with my real estate agent. And eventually we found one, we found our first deal, and it was actually a little less than a year ago.
That's awesome. So a little less than a year ago you started. Now, before we get into that deal, I want to point out a couple quick things I noticed here. First of all, you decided that it was too expensive or too competitive in Denver. So you went somewhere else. Now, a lot of our listeners are having that same problem. They live in LA, in New York, in Seattle, in Denver, whatever, and things are too expensive. So a lot of people have a choice of I can either, not invest, or I can try to go elsewhere. And that's a tough decision for people. So what I like is that you did invest somewhere else, but you didn't just, go to a map and throw a dart. Like, you picked somewhere that you had a competitive advantage. Like, you knew Florida. And so I just think that I want to commend you on that. I mean, again, you didn't just say, hey, some guy in the podcast said Florida was good, let's go and buy there.
Point of clarification, I don't think she said she knew Florida, like the whole Florida. That's sure. A pretty big state, Brandon. I bet you it's probably a submarket within Florida. But
that's probably
true. Yeah, going for an entire state is probably a bit wide in terms of your farm. So you chose what specific market again?
I chose where I lived in Florida. So Okay. Specifically, yeah, it was Fort Walton Beach area near Eglin Air Force Base.
So. Right on.
Awesome. And so you picked near Air Force Base because you also have experience with military stuff. So again, it's another one of those competitive advantages. You went somewhere that you knew. I mean, even if people haven't lived in another area, maybe they have family members somewhere else. Maybe they travel there a lot, whatever. Like, if you're going to invest out of the area, it's really, really helpful to do what you did. I think that's great.
Exactly. And for the people, I guess, who aren't particularly priced out of their area, but it is very competitive. Once you start networking and getting those connections, I mean, part of that is how I got my two condos here in Colorado, even though the market is crazy. So.
Oh, cool. Nice. So yeah, we'll definitely get to that. So let's go to that first deal.
Yeah.
Okay. You didn't have any more that you wanted to point out, Brandon?
Oh, I think I did. What else was I going to point out? I don't remember. I lost. What do you want to point
out?
Just
trying to keep everybody on track. I just wanted to point out how well you interrupted her.
I know. That's what I do. Yeah. That's what I do. Right. There were two things, and I don't remember the second, so whatever. It'll come to me. But let's go to that first deal.
Let's go to that deal. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, my first deal, I was talking about the short sale that ended up falling through. But, we thought, okay, short sale, we're going to put an offer on something that is worth more, and we're just going to take over what's left over on the mortgage, which was an amazing idea. And the cool thing about this is there was an HOA on that particular property, and the front of the property needed painting. It looked really, really bad, but the inside of the property looked great. So apparently this property wasn't getting a lot of attention. And I called out the HOA asking, hey, what do you cover? Do you cover the outside? Getting all their information. And they said, yeah, hey, we'll paint it for, that's our duty. And the owners didn't even know that. They didn't know that they could call. And so that was kind of an edge to get in on the short sale that, again, wasn't getting a lot of attention. But after a few months, they came back and they said, hey, we actually need a little bit more money to make this deal work. And my numbers didn't work out. So I went looking at a bunch of other properties, putting offers on them. So after moving away from the short sale, we moved into other townhouses in the area. And we actually found one just down the street. So again, same area. We knew the rental type stuff, how much is it going to rent for each month? How old is it? All of that. This one didn't particularly have an HOA. Put an offer on it and it was accepted, and that all ended up working out. There were some obstacles on it, but we were determined to get that first rental, and it eventually worked out, I guess. It was good.
Okay, so the first rental was a townhouse.
Yes.
Okay. Can you give us a little more information about the townhouse? Any numbers, any kind of info to help us out?
Yeah. So the first townhouse that we actually got a deal on, it was for sale for, maybe 95 or something. We ended up getting it for 89, closing costs all paid for, which was also good because you save a little of money there versus in a competitive market where, in a competitive market, it's really hard to get those closing fees covered.
Yeah.
But it was a 2-bedroom, 2.5 bathroom with a fenced in yard. So we knew this would be really attractive and it also had a 1-car garage, which a lot of townhouses in that area don't. And, if you get high wind, hurricanes can come into that area or tropical storms. So a lot of people like to have covered parking. A lot of people like fence yards in case they have kids or pets. And the good thing about having 2-bedroom, 2.5-bath is that each bedroom upstairs has its own bathroom and then, you know, the half bath downstairs. So we knew that would be attractive. It cash flows very nicely and you're attracting good tenants as well, because, you know, most people at least are employed by the multiple military bases in that area. And oftentimes those come with a contract, so they have reliable income.
Yeah, I love nice. That. I love that.
That's great.
Oh, I was going to ask about the HOA thing. So this property, the townhouse, has an HOA. Is that correct?
This one particularly does not, actually.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Because I know you mentioned that earlier with the other ones you were looking at, the HOA. So this one doesn't. Would you buy a property? I mean, you have condos, so you must buy them with HOAs. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think HOAs, I mean, as long as they seem to have the proper reserves, you know, I'll ask around a lot to see, hey, how is the rest of the property looking? You know, the real estate agent will have a pretty good idea as well. If I contact the HOA and they don't get back to me for a week, then, you know, that might be an issue, but maybe not. But I have no issue investing in places with HOAs. Of course, the two condos here in Colorado, HOAs are very high here, in my opinion. I'm sure they're higher elsewhere, but they are pretty high. You can find HOAs for, you know, a little condo that are upwards of $300 a month. But if you can make the cash flow work, then I'm not really concerned about it. So
sure.
Okay. You just have to factor those numbers into your costs.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. I find it interesting, the whole condo thing. Some people like Josh Josh had really bad experience with condos. Other people have, you know, good luck with them. So, you know, again, everyone's different.
Yes. And
yeah. It's interesting. I mean, I was talking to a buddy this weekend who is the president of an HOA. And he's like hardcore, all about, you know, making sure everything is efficient, you know, runs it really well. And, you know, I would buy a condo in an HOA that he's running. But then again, I've had other experiences myself, which could be an absolute nightmare and you know, costs that can just pop up. Hey, oh, we've decided we're going to put a pool in. Oh, and you're going to, you know, incur this large chunk.
Yeah.
You know. All right.
Yes. And that's actually happened to me recently. I have 2 condos in the same area, but I do try to diversify where I buy, even in, you know, if I'm buying in Florida or wherever. So right. We had an assessment come due recently, but, you know, luckily, I don't know, I see it kind of as a good thing because we switched the people that were managing the HOA and these people are so much better. They say that here are all the things, they've already started improving the area big time. And even though they increased the HOA fees, we're seeing those results right now. And my properties still cash flow nicely. So that's why when I buy those condos, I make sure that I'm cash flowing a little bit more because the HOA is definitely a variant factor.
And the assessments, you know, those can come out of nowhere. So, mm-hmm. you know, for somebody who's thinking about condos, you should do what Sarah did, which is, you know, obviously you want to talk to the HOA, but you also want to talk to the homeowners. You want to kind of see what kind of history there has been of assessments. If there's just random assessments every X amount of months or once a year, every 2 years, it's just something to be aware of. Let's go back to this deal because you said the word we. Now, is we you and the agent? Did you have a partner?
Sure. Well, my husband and I mean, my husband's a little less involved in it, but yeah, we is typically me and my agent. So
okay.
No partnerships yet, although that might be something, it's not a priority right now. So if something kind of comes across and, you know, maybe I am financially independent to a point where I want to pursue those, then that might happen in the future. So
sure, that makes sense.
And this property down in Florida, are you managing that now or is there a management company? How's that working?
Sure. Well, since I just got a lot of these properties, I actually have 4 properties in Florida. They're all townhouses. They just went through a recent inspection. A lot of the handoff, we can hire an actual place, a company that will handle just the turnover. So they'll go, I mean, they can find you a tenant. They'll do the walkthroughs. They, you know, will manage all the, you know, before and after walkthrough inspections. They hand it back off to you and then you just field the calls throughout that time. And luckily, you know, it's a really nice area of Florida. I have tons of friends. So they are still living down there. So when we go down and visit them, we do the walkthrough of those properties and make sure that they're still taking good care of them.
So for a company that just does the turnover, what cost are we talking about? I mean, typical property management, 8 to 12%, give or take. What are you paying for that? I mean, is it less?
Yeah, so it's eight. I know that's like, yeah, 8 to whatever % for the management per month. And then I know a lot of places will take a half month's rent to a full month's rent for placing tenants. They only charge a half month's rent for everything for that one time. And then you take care of the rest. And so far it's been working out nicely. You know, my properties have been, especially since I've just acquired them from other people, there's been an inspection, you know, everything's been in good shape to begin with. It's been working out, but I don't know that it'll do that for the long run. So I may transition to full-on property management, but for now, it is working out nicely.
Okay. Gotcha. So you haven't had repairs or any issues like that? And if they were to come up, then I guess you start to figure out maybe a transition or figure out what you're going to do at that point.
Yes, yes. And, you know, at the end, they'll definitely say, okay, well, these blinds, they weren't on there beforehand, and these blinds are all messed up or something. And, you know, maybe those tenants had pets and their dogs were on them or something. So, yeah, it hasn't been a big deal yet. We've been able to address anything that, I mean, honestly, and I've had little turnover so far. I've had 2 people turnover in, because I've only been doing this for a year so far. So,
sure.
But yeah, it's been working out so far, but we'll see if it will down the road.
That's cool. Now, are these newer properties, or are these older, you know, like what years are these properties typically built in, the townhouses?
Sure. It's a mix. So down in Florida, I have 2 townhouses and they're actually pretty close to each other, practically neighbors. Those were built. They were built in, I think, the late 80s. And okay. Then the other ones are actually about 45 minutes away. That area is very large. So it's on the other side of the military base. And so those are about probably 15 years old or so, maybe okay. 20.
Okay, cool. It's just something for people to consider when you're buying a property. I mean, you can buy them, like, I tend to buy properties that are like 1900, 1905, 1920. And I mean, my newest property is like, I think 1970s, but most of them are in the 20s or before. But I live in this local area. I expect that they're going to cost more to fix up and things. But you bought a little bit newer. And some people buy only new. I mean, only the next 5 or 10 years. And it's just something to consider when you're buying at a distance. It's sometimes a little better to buy newer like you did, or at least like middle range, not the 1910 house from 2,000 miles away.
Yes, yes. And I've actually been looking back in Michigan. And so with some networking that I've been doing, you know, I'm looking at some duplexes near college towns. And those are definitely older houses. So I've learned the questions that I need to ask for older houses, such as, you know, is the electrical updated and, you know, drywall, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, learning kind of that area as well, you know, the average age of those houses and what's good and bad about them. So,
yeah. I love that. That's awesome. I'm going to try to do a webinar on that, on buying old houses, because that's something that people deal with. I mean, why not? We should just do a whole webinar on that. Anyway, I'll do that sometime. Very cool. Last question I have before we kind of move on to, how do you finance them?
Financing. So a lot of them are traditional mortgages, and I've also been utilizing my home equity line of credit to help with down payments. And, you know, because after a while, you know, I have 6 properties in 1 year. So my income, for example, like debt to income ratio or whatever, I can't use my rental income on when I apply for loans, for example, because they need 2 years for the most part. So I have to start transitioning to portfolio loans or, you know, looking into other means, you know, cash out refinance on other properties that I own.
Cool. And could you explain a little bit on the home equity line of credit? What does that mean that I've been utilizing my home equity line of credit?
Sure. What I mean by that is, you know, I obviously, well, maybe not obviously, but I don't have all this money just laying around to put on down payments.
Stuff. You're in the military, though, and the military gets paid really well. We all know, right? I mean, you guys are rolling in 6-figure jobs there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, and you know, we do. I make a comfortable living, absolutely, but I'm not going to keep that as, you know, keep that money liquid for the most part.
Sure.
So I don't want to put it in index funds, mutual funds, and then pull it out. I'd rather, you know, utilize. I guess, you know, I'd rather leverage money. So that's been very great, and on this end, because as I start cash flowing more, I just pay down the, you know, the HELOC right away or as much as possible. And then when I'm able to move, you know, I can just put it on the HELOC again if I want to. That isn't always the case, but it's definitely helped accelerate my ability to acquire properties.
Okay. So essentially you have like a line of credit on your personal house that you can use then to buy these other ones. Yeah, I love that strategy. I did the same thing when I was starting my first property. Actually, I got a HELOC on it and I used that as well. So can I plug Josh? You didn't let me plug. I got a whole chapter on really? This in the book on investing in real estate with no and low money down, which you can pick up at biggerpockets.com/no money or on Amazon. Whole chapter on HELOC. So, all right.
There you go.
Perfect.
Fabulous. Right. Fabulous. Are you done? Okay.
I'm done plugging.
Seriously?
Plugging.
Are you sure?
Biggerpockets.com/no money.
Oh, and you know, when you have a free chance, take a look at a picture of me. I'm magnificent.
Yeah.
I'm Brandon Turner.
Take a look.
All right.
All right.
So you've got these four townhouses in Florida, and you had mentioned two condos in Colorado. So tell us, did those come in order, like the four Florida, then the two Colorado, or?
No, actually, it's interesting because when I bought my first townhouse down there, it's just kind of a line of townhouses, you know, again, no HOA, but there is a guy that kind of connects everybody where, you know, if they want to, I don't know, have barbecues or something, he emails everybody. So he sent me an email and, you know, I told him I was an investor and he said, oh, great. You know, I have an investment condo there townhouse, and I was looking to sell that maybe in the future. And then he eventually connected me to somebody two or three doors down who wanted to sell his property. So we started off with that townhouse and then eventually, you know, started looking. I think it went Florida first. And then I found the Colorado condo, the first Colorado condo. And then I guess it just kind of waterfalled. So from there, I, you know, another Florida deal popped up. And so I bought one, you know, that's 45 minutes away from my very first townhouse there. And then I was contacted by the guy who wanted to sell the townhouse just a few doors down, if this makes sense. Hopefully I'm not being too confusing. Yeah. And so it was kind of interesting because I wasn't sure how many properties I was going to have by the end of, you know, December. Within 6 months, I had three properties and then an offer already in for a fourth one. So it all just kind of pops out of the woodwork as opportunities arise and you can prepare yourself. And the HELOC has helped me do that. So
right on. No, that's great.
Awesome.
So you've done six deals. You did six deals in your first year once you actually got going. And what's the plan here? I mean, are you trying to get to some number? Are you trying to become a full-time investor? You know, what's the long-term goal with where you're going?
Sure. Well, my long-term plan was financial independence. So, you know, I wanted to completely replace my current income, but financial independence is, you know, am I making enough to cover my expenses? And so, you know, I thought, okay, I can do that with, you know, seven properties at least, right? And I was able to cash flow a little better with those properties. So I reached, you know, financial independence in the sense a little bit earlier. So with those six properties, and I thought, okay, seven properties by summer of 2017, and I'll be good. And I got six by May of 2016. And I thought, okay, well, maybe if we do 10 by 2017, and, you know, now we're about to, you know, hopefully have this duplex in Michigan. So that'll be a few more doors. And so now, you know, I think the plan is still financial independence, acquire those properties as they go, you know, about, you know, 20, 25 years, think about changing out those properties so we can continue the depreciation and the tax benefits of them to other rentals and maybe even an apartment complex. You know, so I've been looking into that a little bit more. I really like that podcast on breaking into apartment complexes. So maybe that down the line, and I'd have that kind of as a soft 2025, but we'll see. Maybe it'll be a lot earlier.
So it's a little bit of a slippery slope. So, you know, seven became 10, 10's become an apartment complex. And little by little, you know, you get hooked on this thing. Let me ask you about finding the deal. So it sounds like everything, you're not out there, you know, you're trying to get financial independence. You're trying to create a business that provides you with cash flow. You're not trying to build a business that you have to be active in, like flipping houses or wholesaling. This is more of a passive endeavor. You know, some people would call true investing. Are you actively marketing to find these properties, or it's just like, you know, you've got a plan little by little, slow as it goes, and kind of get them as they come? What's the plan?
Sure. It's a little bit of both. So it started out just, you know, connecting with an agent and trying to find out, okay, well, you know, this property cash flows nicely. And after a while, you start networking. So I'm connected to wholesalers now. And so wholesalers will come to me and say, hey, I have this property. You want it? And, you know, we can work a deal from there. So it gets a little bit easier. I'm not trying, you know, like you had a 23-year-old with 58 deals or something recently, which was insane. Because as I'm listening to that, I'm thinking, wow, and I'm about to record this podcast. What do they want to hear from me? But it was just amazing. It was amazing hearing what he does, you know, and maybe someday that will be something that I set my eye on. But currently, you know, being employed full time, and I also have, you know, a side job that I do as well. So that is currently not a priority. And so I'm just as things come to me, I take advantage of them, and I will go looking for opportunities if I'm ready, or if I don't know, they aren't coming to me.
Yeah,
makes
well,
sense.
Just to expand on that point there, you know, we had, you know, Devin on the show, who was a guy who'd done like, you know, 50 some deals and 23 years old. And those shows are amazing. And that show was incredible. At the same time, people love to hear stories like yours, right? Like it's so much, it's attainable, right? Like you're doing what everyone wants to do is I'm going out there. I'm getting financial independence. I have this number. I have a goal set. Like it's just so like real. And like, this is what, I mean, I don't know. I love your story. I think it's fantastic.
I do too. I mean, I think a lot of people don't want to be full-time investors. A lot of people don't want to, you know, be constantly doing their real estate. They want to pick up some properties and find financial independence. I mean, that's their goal. So I think it's awesome as well.
Yeah. Good job. All right. So what about the bad things? Like, what's the biggest obstacle you faced in real estate? Has everything been easy for you? Have you had any trouble?
Yeah, there have been a few obstacles and, you know, mistakes along the way. So for obstacles, actually, and it was going back to that very first deal, we put the offer on the place and, you know, everything was looking good. And about 3 or 4 days before we were supposed to close, my lender came back saying, we can't finance this deal. Ooh. And yeah, it was incredible. I couldn't believe it. And so, you know, it turns out they just didn't get paperwork done in time. And they said, well, it'll be, you know, another 3 weeks or so. And, you know, we weren't really open to doing that. And the sellers were kind of, you know, it was either this or possible financial trouble for them. So we were able to, you know, creative financing. We had, of course, some of our own cash, but we were able to utilize the HELOC in order to, the home equity line of credit, utilize the HELOC to pay for the rest of property in cash. And that brought the purchase price down last minute too, so it worked out for everybody. And it brought the purchase price down because initially they were paying our closing costs. So, And so it was all great. It worked out. And, you know, so that was one obstacle. And another obstacle I'm facing right now is, again, because I have been in this game less than 2 years, my rental income doesn't count as income. So when I want to finance another property, and there's plenty of other ways to get above that, of course, you know, you can, if you own a property outright because you paid for it with your HELOC, you can, you know, cash out, refinance, all that kind of stuff. So there are absolutely ways to get around it. And I would talk to anybody who wants to acquire properties quickly is to make sure that you don't take no for an answer, because I could have called that one person who said, no, this is, you know, you have too many properties or whatever. But then you can ask them questions. Well, how can I, instead of, hey, I want this, you know, can you give it to me, versus how can I get there?
Yeah.
So if somebody says no to you, you talk to them and say, this is my specific goal. And these are the obstacles I have, but I want to know how I can get there. And if they can't help you, ask who else they know that can help you. So, you know, I've done that before where, you know, you can call 5, 6, 20 people and eventually get to where you need to be.
Yeah, that's so great. True. Yeah, so true. Can you real quickly explain what you mean by it? Just in case people have never heard of that 2-year rule about they can't count your income as income. What is that? What do you mean by that?
Sure. So for rental income, or really, and I think this might be for all income, you have to show steady income. So for example, a lot of times when you are applying for a mortgage, they say don't switch jobs because you need that steady income. So for 2 years, they need to average that out for your rental income, for your regular income, whatever. If you're a contractor and you just started a business in the past year, well, they need it for 2 years on your past tax returns, or most people do. So sometimes if you're, you know, a portfolio lender or, you know, hard money lender, that, you know, they of course have more flexibility because they're not going to sell off your loan to somebody who has all these stipulations beforehand. But yeah, so they need to average out all of that for it to count. And unfortunately with, you know, these six properties, none of them count at the moment.
Yeah. So it can be tough just to qualify for that mortgage. I could be wrong here, but I think that's actually a Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac rule, is they won't let you count income, like rental income, until you've been a landlord 2 years, which is a good reason why people are out there thinking, I should, you know, I really want to get into real estate sometime. Go buy a rental property. Like, because 2 years from now, it's going to help you out quite a bit. I'm not saying buy a bad one, but, you know, use that as a little bit of fire. Like, the sooner you get started, the sooner that 2 years wears off and you can start using your rental income, your cash flow as income to qualify for more mortgages. So there you go.
Exactly.
Nice. All right, cool. I've got a question on this whole plan, you know, the 6 to the 10 to the, you know, again, the mega apartment complex that you're looking to do. How'd you put all this together? I mean, you know, you've made a decision on how many properties you wanted to buy. You know, you've clearly decided I don't want to be an active full-time real estate investor, at least for now. So how'd you get that plan together? And how did you get to that first deal? There's so many people who never get to that first deal. And, you know, you're not very far from that first deal. You're plus in with 6 properties, which is phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. But help out the listeners who are sitting there saying, but how'd she do it? How'd she do it? How did she put that plan together? Like, what, you know, what steps did she take? Where'd she find the agent? You know, what order do I have to do things in? What do I do? What would you tell them?
Sure. Well, you know, if you're not going to invest specifically in your area, it's good to get referrals to who you want to work with in real estate agents. You know, it's a lot. I mean, a lot of people might blow you off. For example, if you don't have any properties and you're saying, hey, I'm an out-of-state investor and I want to buy an investment property. Well, you can come to them again saying, this is, you know, I've done my research and this is what I'm seeing about the market. This is what I'm looking for. I see that these properties on Zillow, for example, because, you know, maybe you don't have access to the MLS. I see these properties will rent for around this area and cash flow for around this area. That's right up my alley. I would love to be put on the MLS and showings or whatever. See if these people work with investors, first of all. But if we are talking about just trying to jump into the first deal, I think a lot of times people, you know, they get afraid because, you know, they hear all these horror stories, for example, about, and we've talked about that before, or at least you all have on the podcast, for evictions and all these, you know, getting this midnight phone call and having to go fix toilets or whatever. But, you know, my plan came together because I wanted to invest for cash flow. I wanted to eventually, you know, be able to walk away from a job if I didn't want to go somewhere or if I didn't want to do something and really just pursue or work because I wanted to work. And so when I found out that real estate could do that for me, I looked at how much cash flow I needed to replace my income and I started going for it. So if you do your research and you are factoring in all those bad things that could happen and it's looking good to you, then it looks like it's a priority for you. I think a lot of people, it's very easy to look at something and say, a lot of work, no thanks. And, you know, maybe they're just not passionate enough to, you know, break through those molds. But it came together for me because I wanted that freedom. And I was able to figure out the numbers for the cash flow and eventually collect the properties to make that happen.
Awesome. Cool.
I love it.
I love it. All right. My last question before we go to the fire round. How many hours a week do you work on your real estate?
You know, that's something I've been trying to figure out lately. And I would say if I am actively searching, if we're counting that, actively searching for deals, of course, per week, I'd say, I don't know, maybe 5 to 5 5 hours-ish. And I don't know that that's typical, because it's not because I have to spend those 5 hours. It's because I'm curious. So sure. I'll hop on Zillow and I'll just, you know, I'll surf it in my free time. And I'll see, oh, look at this. Okay. Well, you know, keeping up on the market, or when I'm, especially now, since I'm trying to break into a new market, I'm doing a lot of studying. But again, you know, you say work on real estate, or how much time do I really spend on real estate? You know, I don't know, a half hour can go by and I feel like, oh, right, I've just hopped on the computer, or even more, because I'm just curious. And I think it's good. If you're talking about how many times or how many hours, even a month, that I'm answering calls from my tenants, I don't know, maybe an hour a month, if that, where I'm calling my team down in Florida saying, hey, they called in, they need this done, when can you go see them? And, you know, it all works out. So yeah, I'd say an hour a month with 6 properties, answering tenant related things, but otherwise research and planning the future a little bit more.
Okay.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Awesome. All right. Moving on to the world famous fire round.
It's time for the fire round.
We're always looking for ways to improve, searching for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for better is by matching with quality candidates. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BiggerPockets. Just go to Indeed.com/BiggerPockets right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Indeed.com/BiggerPockets. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes to help you see new homes first. And they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes you like, so you can find a home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours even on the same day, with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to help you get the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today. Pretty good little episode, right? While you were listening, you could have been getting paid rent with RentApp. Landlords love RentApp because it makes rent collection a breeze. RentApp uses ACH bank transfers to deposit funds directly into your account. Setup is straightforward for renters, and landlords don't need to download anything. Both have peace of mind with the digital transaction history. Isn't it time you made landlording a little easier? RentApp, the best way to pay or collect rent. Learn more at rent.app/landlord. That's rent.app/landlord. Real estate investing is great, but for some, the tenant phone calls and clogged toilets aren't all that attractive. So how do you invest in real estate without getting your hands dirty? Invest for truly passive income with Pine Financial Group. Pine's mortgage fund offers a targeted 8% preferred return and an attractive profit split, with 70% of net profits going to the investors. You'll earn passive income by participating in lending to house flippers. And it's secure because senior lien holders, that's you, are first in line to get paid. Their rigorous underwriting process and the backing of a physical asset mitigate downside risk. Plus, by investing with Pine Financial Group, you contribute to the revitalization of communities by directing your funds from Wall Street to Main Street and supporting local economies. The investment is reserved for accredited investors. Don't miss this opportunity to back Main Street over Wall Street and start earning passive real estate income. Learn more about investing with Pine at pinefinancialgroup.com/BP. pinefinancialgroup.com/BP.
All right. The questions from the fire round come direct out of the Bigger Pockets forums, which of course our listeners can go engage in by going to biggerpockets.com/forums. And it's totally free. So jump in. Number one, do you feel it's safe to invest where you don't live? Like, is it stupid for a newbie? I know like you've kind of been answering that this whole thing, but, and so maybe we'll alter it a little bit. What's the harm in investing out of your area?
Well, the harm investing in out of the area is, well, first of all, you're not immersed in the culture. You know, you don't know not being immersed in the market and the economy can be an issue. So, you know, if you're investing somewhere, for example, and there's one major employer and where if they left, I don't know, like a car company or something and they left. Or the Air Force, possibly. Yes. You know, there's one military base and you buy and that base closes, then what's that going to do to the economy? Are you going to have renters still? So if you don't know that, I mean, that could happen down the line. You could be, you know, trying to invest in older houses, right? Where you've been buying newer houses and you don't realize to ask the questions that maybe it doesn't have electrical updated. So you have to eventually do that down the line after you figure out that you've fielded 5 or 6 calls in the past 2 months for breakers going out or something of that nature. So I think it absolutely can be safe to do, but you do need to do your research and you need to know the questions. You need to know what to ask because you don't know what you don't know. So a lot of times it's asking people, what don't I know? What are the common pitfalls here? And then jump in with a real estate agent that you trust who may invest themselves or at least works with investors.
Perfect.
Perfect. Perfect.
Well, along those lines, how do you build a great team that you trust? This is the exact question that's written down. I love how it just flows naturally. How do you build a great team that you trust when you don't see them every day? Are there specific requirements that you look for?
Sure. I do ask, I have a bunch of questions. For example, with people who are going to do the repairs, you know, of course, those, are you licensed? Do you have insurance? But ask about their hours and, you know, if we have after hours type stuff going on, all the services that they offer and how they vet their employees. So, you know, are you just sending a mom and pop shop over there, which, you know, I have supported in the past, but sometimes it's just easier to have somebody that you can call right away. And you know that if somebody else is on vacation, that they can come and take their place. The real estate agent that I work with in Florida is amazing. I happened to be at training for the Air Force and my flight mate in my training, his wife was the agent. So, of course, she knew about investors and everything. She's been phenomenal. And then, of course, referrals, asking around. So there have been plenty of people that say, hey, I know this person. And, you know, being specific with what you want. You need to be clear with what your goals are to be able to fulfill your goals. So if you're saying, hey, I want somebody who's reliable, I want somebody who is quick, I want somebody who isn't going to cheat me over or whatever, you know, you lay that all out and you make sure that as you talk to people, you can do that. And actually, the contractor I work with down in Florida who does all my repairs was through Thumbtack. And so, you know, I took a bunch of bids and I interviewed everybody. And, you know, and then I also get feedback from, you know, for example, if they happen to go somewhere where the tenant is actually home and the tenant sees them do the repairs, I ask if they're a professional. All of that feedback is good for keeping people on and finding people.
I especially like that note.
Really quick.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. So Thumbtack is, you know, you can have it as an app on your phone, it's a website, but you put out a bid for your zip code saying, I need XYZ done, and you'll have up to 5 people respond, you know, and place a bid saying, I can do it for this price, I can do it at this time, or whatever, I can fulfill these services. Yeah, so, and I would say if you are pursuing Thumbtack, something I found that works is sometimes I'll put out a work order and I won't get a lot of feedback. And so I've learned that I'd say I'm a real estate investor. I need this done. And maybe it's something small, but, you know, I need this done. And even though it's this small thing and you know, it may not be worth it to put in a bid, I'm an investor and I have calls coming in all the time for requests. So if you can do this, you'll absolutely get repeat business. And then that'll get people always replying. So
that's cool. That's a good tip. Yeah. Well, one thing you mentioned a second ago that I wanted to point out that I really like, and we do a lot in our company, is asking the tenant later how the contractor was. So part of our entire system is whenever a contractor goes over to do a maintenance request, my kind of office manager will actually call the tenant every time and say, was it taken care of, you know, well? How did the contractor do? Are you satisfied? You know, like, and that has helped us in a tremendous way field out the bad ones. You know, yeah, he came in, but he stunk like cigarette smoke real bad. And like, he, you know, he's kind of mean to us, or he yelled at my kid, whatever. Like, we find those things out and we don't use them anymore. So yeah, great tip.
That's a terrible contractor.
We've had such bad.
Wow,
we had a contractor once that wouldn't talk to women because he didn't think women like were good enough to talk to. And so like, he would only talk to them. It was weird. Like, we've had weird contractors. Yeah. Welcome to Podunk. Yeah. Welcome to Podunk. All right.
I would say I find tenants are very appreciative when you follow up too. You know, yes. They know that you as the landlord care and, you know, will take care of them if it's not taken care of it in the way that they appreciate. So,
yeah. Yeah. You know, random funny story. So we had a water leak recently on one of our properties, and the bathtub overflowed a little bit because there was a drain stoppage. Anyway, long story. Got a plumber, took care of the problem, and we even went above and beyond, and we hired a professional house cleaner to come in and clean up everything. Like, even though it was already clean, I mean, she just detailed that whole section of the house really nicely. The tenant got mad at us and called just like crazy angry because they thought, you must be covering something up. Did somebody die in this house? Or was this a meth house? And she was like accusing us of doing something bad because we went above and beyond. So this is
random.
You're
always going to find paranoid people.
Yeah, paranoid. She was so paranoid. I know.
Wow.
I know. We're like, crap.
There's today's quick tip.
Yeah, quick tip. Careful of the paranoid ones. So, all right. Anyway, number three. Should people manage their own properties or should they look to hire it out, especially in the beginning?
Well, I think that's a big personality question. I have learned a lot managing my own property, figuring out, for example, air conditioning, you know, if there's a power surge, you know, what can I just tell tenants to do to see if we actually need somebody, you know, hey, you could just go in here, flip this breaker, flip the outside breaker, whatever, with not being physically there. And I don't know. I think it depends. If you are worried that you're going to get a phone call in the middle of the night and that's going to absolutely ruin you, then, you know, it's for me, managing my own properties has relaxed me a lot. It's helped me understand the property a little bit more that I own and don't live in. And it's helped me realize that, okay, a call has come in and now I can just field that call elsewhere and it'll all work out. And, you know, instead of me being worried about all these calls coming in and having, oh, I don't know, for whatever reason, oh, this call came in and it's a horrible house. The tenants are mad at me. Oh, no, they're not. Something happened. The tenants called. We took care of it quickly and life is good and it's moved on. And, you know, in a way I've saved some money, not utilizing property management, doing something that I'm happy to do. And it doesn't stress me out anymore if I do get that call. But at the same time, you know, somebody might say, absolutely not, I can't do this. And, you know, I would probably recommend, you know, especially if you feel, you know, if you're going to travel a lot and you just can't give the proper attention to your tenants when calls do come through, absolutely hire property management.
Yeah.
And really quickly for listeners, when you're factoring in the acquisition of a property, you always want to factor in property management. Always, yeah. always. Because if you end up doing what Sarah's doing, then at the end of the day, okay, there's bonus on top that, you know, instead of paying, you know, 8 to 12%, she's paying, let's say, 6 on average. Okay, she saves a few percentage points that way. But had she not, you know, maybe in a year or two, she's going to end up using property management. And now she's bleeding money because the property manager is taking all of her profit. So
you're always
factor that in.
You're telling my story.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Sucks.
All right. Last question. For young investors who might lose momentum, do you have any tips to keep them on track? What kept you on track? What kept you motivated? What kept you going?
Absolutely. What kept me going is going for that specific cash flow number. So if you are losing steam for whatever reason, I think it's good to reevaluate your goals. What are you actually going for? And what obstacles are demotivating you, if anything? And, you know, what can you, maybe hop onto Bigger Pockets and, you know, listen to all these podcasts to remotivate you, because they absolutely do for me. I mean, every time I hear about, you know, a 23-year-old doing insane things that I never even thought about doing at 23. You know, it's amazing. So what keeps me going is that financial security in the future, working toward that retirement, being able to pick up for, I don't know, whatever amount of time and see the world, experience, you know, have new experiences, be able to support family, you know, parents in the later stages of life, whatever may come down the line. So that's what keeps me going. And, you know, because that was such a big financial blueprint for me to have that security, it's amazing what it's done for me, because now instead of me worrying about down the line, what if, I'm just thinking, okay, it's all taken care of. I can concentrate on the here and now and not worry so much about what's down the line and what may come. And it really is a beautiful thing. So if that's something that you're struggling with and you're losing steam, find that thing that you need to have and figure out how real estate can serve it.
I love that.
That's great.
Awesome. All right. Well, before we get out of here, let's end with our world famous.
Famous four.
All right. These are the same questions we ask every guest every week. So I know you've heard them before. So let's start at number one.
Oh, yeah.
What is your favorite real estate related book?
Oh, real estate related book. I think it kind of goes along with the Rich Dad Poor Dad series. And this is going to mix a little bit with the business book as well. But it's, again, Robert Kiyosaki, Who Took My Money? And it is my favorite book in the whole series. It's, you know, it's a little bit more detailed than Rich Dad Poor Dad, of course, but it touches on a lot of his other books as well in a more compressed manner. So if you're wondering about, you know, stocks, bonds, real estate, it's all, you know, how to invest, all of that kind of stuff, it's a lot more compressed and really, really interesting in terms of how you can make your money work for you.
And cool. It's got an awesome title that I would love hearing Mr. T read.
Yeah.
Who took my money?
All right. So you're going to have to pick another book for your favorite business book. So what's your favorite business book?
Sure. Well, what helped me focus. So currently, I guess business book is Secrets of the Millionaire Mind. I've already kind of talked about that. It really helped me focus on the why of my business, which is also something very important. And you'll find that in the Rich Dad Poor Dad series books too, is concentrating on what you're doing and why you're doing it and how you're getting there. So Secrets of the Millionaire Mind.
Awesome. Cool. Awesome. All right. So what do you do for fun besides, you know, flying in the back of fighter jets or front of fighter jets?
Sure. I love to dance. I grew up a dancer and I teach dance. It's my secondary job locally here and teach violin and I do jiu-jitsu. So I like a little bit of martial arts and I like to run. So a lot of exercise stuff.
So you're like a dancing, jiu-jitsuing fighter pilot. Nothing yes. Interesting there.
It was a lot of fun in ROTC, you know, teaching that. I'm a combatives instructor for the Air Force as well. So it's been a whole lot of fun.
Hey Brandon, I know have big guys, you want to challenge them, so let's hear it.
Whenever we have this next Bigger Pockets conference, no, I'm just a big guy, so I bet I could take you. Do you think I could take you? You know martial arts, and I can throw people.
You would have your ass kicked so bad by her.
It's not about size, it's the technique.
And you're like 5 foot.
We're doing
two,
it then.
Right, Sarah, you're small.
Yes,
it would be really fun to watch her throw you. I would just get so much pleasure out of watching an ass romping.
All right, good deal. All right, well, next whenever we do the next Bigger Pockets conference, Josh, we're gonna have a wrestling match on stage. It's gonna be great.
Oh, okay.
All right, my final question of the day: what do you believe sets apart the successful real estate investors from those who give up, fail, or never get started?
Oh, I think it's a mixture of things. First of all, in the book, Who Took My Money, it talks specifically about winners who can lose and still win. So you need to factor in the fact that you will lose at some point. You know, you may make a mistake, may obstacle or something out of your control may happen. But are you factoring that into what your plan is? And if so, you'll see, you know, if you are still winning overall, right, you can lose and still win. So that scares a lot of people away when I talk about before, such as evictions or whatever it may come. I think also sometimes people get advice from the wrong people, you know, the naysayers. I worked briefly with a real estate agent who discouraged me from buying my first condo here in Colorado. And, you know, as garden level unit, they said, oh, no, you don't want to buy that. You're not going to find any renters. And it is my best cash flowing asset right now. So, you know, that's one thing. Maybe they need to network a little bit more with like-minded people. You know, it's good to have naysayers to make sure that, you know, you're thinking of everything and you're still passionate about it even after the fact. And I guess the last thing I would say are priorities. I think a lot of people say, oh, you know, for me, right, you know, I'd love to run, you know, a mile and a half under 10 minutes and 30 seconds. But for me, well, am I willing? Is it enough of a priority that I'm going to go out and run in sprints every day and do that? Well, maybe not. I like to run for distance, not for speed. So, you know, a lot of times people just, it's not a priority for them. So I think the people who give up, it just wasn't the biggest priority, or it wasn't serving enough of their priorities, and that's why they give up.
That's fantastic. So true.
Yeah. All right, Sarah, before we let you go, how can people connect with you? Where can they find out more about you?
Sure. I'm on Bigger Pockets, and you know, I'm happy to answer questions and connect through there. So
awesome. Awesome. Cool. Sarah, thank you so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate you sharing your story. And obviously, hopefully, when you listen to show 183, you're also going to be pumped and motivated by this woman who's out there who's done these steals and, you know, yeah.
Oh, yes, thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's right, been fun. We'll see you around the site. Yeah. All right, bye.
All right, guys, that was Sarah Pritchett. Big thanks to Sarah. Again, really cool show. Not that the other people we bring on the show aren't, quote, normal people. Those nammies. But like, she's just, you know, she's kind of an everyday person who's using real estate to a purpose. It's not like she's all out, you know, balls to the wall kind of thing. Can I even say that on my show? Sure. Real estate investor. I don't know if that's crass, but
I don't know either. I actually don't know what that even means, but I mean, we say
it's like hardcore, right? It's like,
But when it, anyway, she's super relatable, super fun, cool. And I think anybody listening to the show, you can achieve what she's doing. Even if you work a full-time job, if you live in an expensive area, if you live in the hottest market in the U.S. today is Denver. And if you live in Denver, you can still do it. If you live in L.A., San Francisco, New York, I don't care. You can do what she's doing.
Yeah, he doesn't care about any of you.
I don't care about any of you. All I care about is me and my hot tub.
Yeah, ridiculous.
Amazing 4th of July. All right.
Ridiculous. All right, man. Well, let's get out of here. Guys, check out the site. Jump on the forums, biggerpockets.com/forums. Check out the show notes, biggerpockets.com/show183. Jump on the webinars, biggerpockets.com/webinar. We put them on every week. Definitely get yourself over there. And that's it. We'll see you next week. I'm Josh Dorkin, signing off.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
There's a reason small multifamily investing is so popular in the Bigger Pockets community. With just a 3.5% down payment, you can own up to 4 different units. Think about it. If you house hack and live in one of the units, you still have 3 different groups of tenants helping you pay down your mortgage every month, 4 kitchens and bathrooms you could renovate to increase your property value, 4 different Airbnbs, medium-term rentals, or other rental strategies that you can try in one property, all in just one transaction. Of course, the question is, where do you find a small multifamily property that you can actually afford? Which market and which deals are best for you? Once you close, how do you manage it, optimize it, keep scaling, and living your life without being tied down to 4 leaky toilets or 4 fussy tenants? All great questions, my friends. All to be answered in the upcoming Small Multifamily Bootcamp with Chris Lopez and Leka Devatha. So if you're serious about growing your portfolio with this highly efficient strategy, head to biggerpockets.com/4, F-O-U-R, today and join us in the Small Multifamily Bootcamp. See you there.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only.
Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all hosts and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.